When you open up the book of Exodus, it is very clear that there is a need for a leader in Israel. As we looked at last Sunday, for hundreds of years, the children of Israel have been afflicted by Egypt's bondage. Pharaoh hated them. And he longed to make the children of Israel and their lives miserable, and that's exactly what they did. In chapter number 1, you come to find out that he made their lives bitter with affliction. They became servants to Pharaoh, building his palaces and working for them to the very bitter and afflicted end. And if that wasn't bad enough, things got worse as it escalated very quickly. And the fact that Pharaoh wanted to do away with the population, they were growing too quickly. As a matter of fact, he was afraid that with the population of Israel growing and expanding the way it was, that if there was ever a tumult in the region and Israel turned against Egypt, they would be quickly outnumbered. And so Pharaoh thought, we have got to do something about the rapid growth rate of Israel. And so he sent out an edict in the land. The edict simply stated that the newborns of all of the children of Israel, the newborn sons, would be killed. And he successfully carried that out. However, in the midst of all of this affliction, God had a plan to deliver the children of Israel. For nearly 400 years, they had been suffering through this anguish and oppression, and God had a plan that He was going to deliver them through it, and that deliverance would come at the hand of a baby boy. The hand of a baby boy that would be born during this tumultuous time for the Hebrew nation. We look at that and we wonder, how is that even possible considering the circumstances? How would God choose to have a baby boy born when all of them are being killed during this time and use him to deliver them? Well, we were reminded last Sunday that God's purposes cannot be defeated. No matter what man may proclaim, if it is God's will that a boy be born for the purpose of delivering Israel out of bondage, then my friend, that's exactly what will happen no matter what the circumstances of life may be. So God blessed the faith of Amram and Jochebed, the mother and father of Moses, and He followed and allowed Pharaoh's daughter to adopt Moses as her very own. So Moses was able to bypass the murderous acts that Pharaoh was bringing upon Israel. He survived and he lived. And the miracle of the story was that he grew up in the palace of Pharaoh. I reminded you last Sunday that here is the uniqueness of God's divine hand in obviously difficult circumstances. For God used the daughter of Pharaoh and the money of Pharaoh and the home of Pharaoh to protect the deliverer of the children of Israel. As a matter of fact, he spent 40 years in the palace. 40 years Moses grew up learning in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. He became highly educated under their immensely civilized institution. But one day Moses discovered that he was not an Egyptian, but that his people were out there under the intense affliction of Pharaoh. His people were the Jewish people, the Hebrew nation. The Bible tells us in the book of Hebrews exactly what Moses did about that when he discovered it. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24 says, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer the affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. And so after 40 years of growing up under the guidance and the parenting, so to speak, of Pharaoh's daughter, he realized he was not an Egyptian, that his people were the ones under great affliction. And so he forsook Egypt, and God led Moses to the desert. The desert of Midian, where he would spend in another 40 years as a shepherd. Think about this. 80 years has passed now. 40 years under this highly educated system. He was trained, the Bible says, in all wisdom and in all knowledge. He was equipped with the highest education one could ever receive during that day and time. 40 years. And now God says, you know what? Your training is not finished. There's still some rough edges that we need to trim up a little bit. There's still some things that we need to get you ready and prepared before you become my leader. And so he sends him from the palace of a highly influential place to the desert for 40 years. God would use Moses as a shepherd leading stubborn sheep for the purpose of leading the stubborn nation of Israel. That's what he was doing. 80 years. Why would God do that? We reminded ourselves last Sunday that it takes time. And it often takes desert places to become the leader that God wants you to be. Sometimes God can put something on your heart and it takes long periods of time and long periods of training before that ever come to fruition. And so Moses spent 80 years in preparation for the biggest role of his life. And it's here, on the backside of a desert in Exodus chapter 3, where God has a special message for Moses. I want you to write down three statements there in your notes as we journey through this together this morning. As we apply this situation in our own lives. Number one, here's the first statement that I want you to write down. God is leading me to do something. God is leading me to do something. I want you to think about this for just a moment. After having spent 40 years as a shepherd in Midian, Moses has an encounter with God in an unprecedented way. God comes to him in the form of a burning bush. Look at verse number 1 of chapter 3. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mount of God, even Mount Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. Here God appears to Moses in the form of a burning bush. Now, Moses is a little perplexed. He's perplexed as to why the bush was on fire but was not disintegrating. And so the verses 3 and 4 tells us that he inches just a little bit closer to investigate it. Now, if Moses was a little jittery, what happens to him next may have scared the daylights out of him. Look with me at verse number 3. And Moses said, I will now turn and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. Now, can you imagine for a moment you being stranded on the backside of the desert? Forget the desert for a moment. Imagine being in your backyard. Maybe you have built a fire. Maybe a bush, a tree in your yard is caught on fire and it's not being consumed. And you're trying to figure this out. Now, there's a reason why I believe that Moses is inching closer to this bush. But because he was in the desert. And these type of fires were very much an ordinary thing. And so they had to be very, very careful that these desert fires didn't consume the region. And so I think Moses was trying to get a little bit closer to see why this bush was burning, but it wasn't being consumed, disintegrated. And as he gets closer, all of a sudden, a voice talks to him from the back. I don't know about you, but if that happens to me in my backyard, you might find me running 3 or 4 miles down the road. It was the voice of God, and he's saying, Moses, Moses. Now think about this. In these verses, God gives Moses some very special instructions at the outside of this encounter with him. The first instruction was to back up. And the second instruction was to take his shoes off. Look at verse number 5. And he said, God speaking here, draw not nigh hither, don't come any closer. Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Now this was important. For these instructions were the appropriate response to the presence of God. He was saying the right way to approach God is in reverence and in holiness. He said, don't come any closer. I don't want you to approach me any closer until you've been cleansed of your sin, cleansed of your defilement. And by the way, take off your shoes, for where you're standing is in the presence of God. Growing up, my grandmother would never, maybe some of you are like this now, maybe your grandmother was like this. My grandmother would never let us wear shoes in the house under any circumstances. Now, she didn't want us tracking dirt and the things that got on our shoes in her home. And she had the type of carpet, I don't really know what the correct identification for it is, but it was a type of carpet where when you vacuumed it, you know, you could see the lines really, really nice. And if you walked in it, your footprint stayed in there. And so there were times as kids when we knew that our grandmother was in the other room and we just needed to run, you know, like from the kitchen to the restroom or something like that. We didn't have time to take off our shoes. Now, we just didn't want to waste it. So we would try to, you know, sneak around to the bathroom, you know, trying to walk as softly as we could on the carpet. But it never worked because of the type of carpet she had. She could see every time footprints, especially shoes, were being brought into the house. And there were times she would get so mad at us, she would take us out back with a water hose and literally wash us down before she would ever let us back in the house again. There was no way we were coming anywhere near that home with our shoes on. And that's the lesson here. He's saying here, before we can rightly communicate with God, we need to remove the uncleanliness in our lives. And we need to enter into His presence with reverence and with respect. That's why God told him to back up. That's why God told him to take his shoes off. He said, you're not coming into my presence with that dirt. You need to clean up. Take your shoes off. And we ought to look at how we approach God in the same light today. I mean, many people will gather around and worship today, and they're not very much concerned with the holiness of God or the reverence of His presence. And so they come in just any way they want to come, and they act any way they want to act. And the most irreverent things that will go on today will often happen under the roof of the house of God. And we ought to be very conscious about how we approach the presence of God, of making sure that we have taken our shoes off and approaching Him with a right spirit and a right heart of cleanliness. And that's why he told him to do it. So the Lord proceeds to inform Moses that he had heard the cry of Israel, that he had seen their affliction and oppression, and his plan was to deliver them. And he was calling Moses to be the deliverer. Look at verse number 10 again. Now come now, therefore, I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. God's plan for Moses was to deliver the children of Israel out of bondage. And I want to remind you this morning that God has a plan for all of His children. A plan. That's why I had you write down as the first statement, God is leading me to do something, because there is not a person in this room today that is not being led by God to do something. God has a plan for your life. I think sometimes when we speak in terms of the will of God and the plan of God, we often sometimes think about men like me or men like Brother Josue, or who's given their lives to full-time ministry. And we might think that that's only what the will of God is for, is people who are given their lives to full-time Christian service, pastors and missionaries and Christian school teachers and so on. But I want to help you to understand something about the plan of God. God's will and God's plan for our lives is not necessarily an occupation, but it is always involving obedience. Always. It may not be a particular occupation that God is leading you to do, but whatever He is leading you to do, it involves you being obedient to the voice of God and obedient to the plan of God in doing exactly what He's leading you to do. And I believe every person here today, God is leading you to do something. Maybe God is leading you to speak to your coworker about the gospel whom you've not yet spoke to about. Maybe God is leading you to serve in a ministry in our church. Maybe God is leading you to go to greater heights in your walk with God. Everybody is being led by God. God has a plan for you, and God has a plan for me, and God had a plan for Moses. God's plan was for him to deliver Israel. Now, I've often said, especially speaking to young people, I think this is relevant for our lives today, that there are four stages of God's plan in the life of a Christian. four stages. The first stage is the presentation of God's plan. That's when he reveals it. That's when he says, here it is. This is what I want you to do. Here's where I want you to go. Here's what ministry I want you to be involved in. Here's what mission field I want you to take the gospel. Here's what I'm leading you to do. God first presents it. The second stage is the preparation of God's plan. This is where you and I respond to it. Sometimes we respond, yes, I will do as you are leading me to do. Yes, I will talk to them about the gospel. Yes, I will be involved in this ministry. Yes, I will do this and that and whatever God is leading. But oftentimes that's where we say, no, Lord, that's not for me. No, I don't think I can serve in that ministry even though you've put it on my heart. No, I don't think I can tell them about the gospel. No, I don't think I can go knock on their door. No, I don't think I can do what you're asking me to do. Do you realize that most Christians never make it out of stage number two? Stage number three is the performance of God's plan. And this is where we do say yes. This is where we obey Him. This is where we do what God is leading us to do. But many times, you and I are stuck in stage number two, not doing the will of God, because we're not responding to what He is leading us to. Then there's a fourth and final stage. It's the persevering in God's plan. That's when we continue with it. A lot of people can have the plan of God revealed to them. They can even do it for a little while, but how many times have we seen God's people quit on Him? It's not enough to just do it once or one day. It's persevering in the will of God. It's continuing to do as God is leading us to do. And I just want to remind you today, no matter where you're at, no matter what's going on in your life, God is leading you to do something. He is leading you to do something. It may not be made known to you in the form of a burning bush. It may not come on the screen today. Hey, this is what you're supposed to do. But when you listen to the voice of God, then you'll understand that God has a plan for your life. And He has a purpose for your life. He wants you to be obedient to the area in which He is leading you. Here's the second statement I want you to write down in your notes. My excuses are no good to God. My excuses are no good to God. Here's the first statement. God is leading me to do something. The second statement is, my excuses are no good to God. Now, here's what happens. God informs Moses of His plan to use him as a deliverer to Israel. And upon receiving that news, he should have rejoiced in the fact that God was going to deliver the people. After all, it was Moses who was enraged at the fact that one of his own people's life was being taken prematurely. And he stepped in a mode of self-defense and killed the Egyptian man to keep his own brother from life being harmed. And that was just 40 years ago. So 40 years ago, you know, Moses' heart was beating for his people. His passion was to see them delivered. His burden was to see them come out from underneath that oppression. And here's what happened. God comes to him and says, Moses, you're the man. I'm going to send you to Egypt, and you're going to be the deliverer to bring my people out of Pharaoh's bondage. And Moses should have rejoiced. He should have been having a worship spell like he's never had before. Thank God, finally, it's going to happen. They're going to be delivered. There's going to be an exodus. But what did he do? He began to argue with God, offering up excuses as to why he could not fulfill God's plan for his life. Warren Wiersbe said, in Egypt 40 years before, Moses had acted like an impetuous horse and rushed ahead of God. But now he is acting like a stubborn mule and he's resisting God. And that's what he's doing. God says, here's the plan, here's what I'm leading you to do. Now he's arguing with God and he's giving excuses as to why he cannot do what God's leading him to do. And let me just say this. This is why I believe with all my heart that many Christians never make it out of stage two in the plan of God. God presents it, and they stay put in stage number two without doing the will of God because of excuses. Excuses. Moses gives four excuses to God about why he could not fulfill what God was leading him to do. Number one, here's the first excuse, insecurity. That's the first blank. Insecurity. Look with me at verse number 11 there in chapter number 3. And Moses said unto God, who am I? Okay, God, I hear what you're saying to me. I hear you want me to go to Egypt and bring Israel out. You've got to... But who in the world am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And Moses' initial response to God's leading was that of surprise. After all, in Moses' eyes, he was a failure. He was too inadequate to do what God was leading him to do. He was insecure about why God would choose him for this great task. You ever felt that way before? Felt feelings of insecurity as, why me, God? Why do you want me to do this? Why do you want me to serve here? Why do you want me to speak to them? Oftentimes, insecurity gets in the way of the plan of God for our lives, and it becomes an excuse for why we do not do the will of God for our lives. There's a simple definition for insecurity. I think I've given this to you in your notes. Insecurity is when we live in reflection of ourselves rather in reflection of Jesus Christ. Listen to me, that's important. When you feel insecure, it is because you have lived in reflection of yourself rather than in reflection of Jesus Christ. Notice what Moses is saying in verse number 11. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, that I should bring forth? I mean, he was so focused on himself rather than on God that he could not see what God could do through him. He made it all about himself. Who am I? I don't have the skills. I don't have the talents. I don't have the abilities. I've failed, Lord. I've killed a man. How in the world can you use me to be a deliverer to my people when I am a failure, when I am inadequate? I just think, God, that you got the wrong person. And here's what God responds to him. Look at verse number 12. And he said, certainly or assuredly, I will be with thee. Hey, Moses, don't worry about it. Don't worry about you, Moses. Don't worry about your failures. Don't worry about your inadequacies. Hey, I'm going to be with you. Here's why you can go be their deliverer. Because I'm going to be with you every step of the way. And really, Moses, it's going to be me working, not really you. I will be with you. I will be with you. And God proved that to be true. Because when the chain of command was given over to Joshua, in Joshua chapter 1 and verse 5, God said to Joshua, as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. God told Moses, Moses, you go. You go do what I'm leading you to do because I will be with you. And I will not forsake you. I will not fail you. I will be with you through this entire journey. Some of us right now are sitting in limbo over the leading of God because we're thinking too much about ourselves rather than the leadership of God. Why me? Pastor, why do you want me to do this? I just don't feel qualified. I feel inadequate. I'm a failure. You know, I blew it out here. I don't know that I can do much better in here. Who am I? Just get your eyes off yourself long enough to realize that if God is leading you to do something, He's going to be with you every step of the way. Sometimes God leads us to speak to our family about the Lord and who am I, God? I just don't know that I can do this. I've got problems. I've got difficulties. Maybe I should call the pastor. Maybe he should come and speak to my family. No, God is leading you to do it. And He's saying to you that if you will by faith do what He is telling you to do, He will be with you and enable you and help you to do what He's telling you to do. Don't allow the excuse of insecurity to stop you from following the leading of God. Well, Moses thought he could outsmart God, and so he steps back and he thinks to himself, well, God's not going to take my excuse of insecurity. Surely there's another one that I can give him to get me out of this mess. And so he gives him the excuse of number two, ignorance. Ignorance. Look at verse number 13. Moses said unto God, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel like you want me to, when I go to them and do what you're telling me to do, and I say, the God of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? Moses' thought process was very much like yours and mine as it relates to the leading of God. Moses was thinking, I've never done this before, God. I don't know what to do. I don't even know what to say. You're telling me to go and get my people. And when I go and I tell them that you've sent me and that we're going to get out of here, they ask me all these questions about how and who and when and where. God, I don't even know how you're going to do this. How do you expect me to be their deliverer when I've never done this before, when I've never entered into this realm before, when I don't know what to do? How many times in your life have you felt God leading you to do something and your fear of the unknown kept you from experiencing the power of God? I look oftentimes in my life, did I miss opportunities? Because I was afraid. Because I had never done it before. I came here 6 years ago. I never started church before. And don't you think that crossed through my mind a little bit? Sure. Especially when other more established churches, 300, 400, 500 people had already been done. I just got to get up there and preach. So I thought that would have been a whole lot easier than coming and starting and beginning again. And I've never done it before. My wife's never been a pastor's wife before. Let's apply it to here. Pastor, I've never worked in children's church before. I've never served as an usher before. I've never sang in the choir before. I've never told anybody about the gospel before. I mean, if God is telling me to go knock on somebody's door this Saturday and tell them about God, I've never done that. What do I say? I don't know what to do. I am ignorant, Lord. I'm just ignorant. No, the ignorant thing is not to do what He's leading you to do. That's the dumb thing. Because here's what God tells Moses he needed to know. Look at it in verse 14. Moses, here's what you need to know. Verse 14. God said unto him, I am that I am. And he said, thou shalt say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. God gave Moses all the knowledge he needed, and that was the knowledge of Him, the knowledge of Christ, the knowledge of God. And listen to me today. If God is leading us to do something, as long as we know beyond doubt that it is Him that has led us, and that it is Him whose hand is upon us, then that is enough to equip us for the job that He has in store. He says, Moses, all you need to know is that I am is sending you. That I am will be with you. That I am will give you all the knowledge that you need. You just need to know me, Moses. That's all you need to know. I've never been to Bible college. Yes, you have, Moses. You've been 40 years in the palace. You spent 40 years in the Dell. You spent more time in Bible college than anybody has, Moses. I'm glad, brother, I didn't have to spend 80 years in Bible college, aren't you? Some of you, Caitlin, some of you others in your medical degrees, aren't you glad? It feels like 80 years, I'm sure. I just don't know. God said, all you need to know is me. Just know me. And I'll equip you along the way. The I am statements of God are given throughout the Scriptures, but nothing so clearly defines who He is than the I am statements of Christ in the Gospel of John. And we just preached through these not too long ago in John chapter 6. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. John chapter 8, He said, I am the light of the world. In John chapter 10, I am the door of the sheep. In John chapter 10, I am the good shepherd. In John chapter 11, I am the resurrection and the life. John chapter 14, I am the way, the truth, and the life. John 15, I am the true vine. He was saying, I am everything that you need, and that's all you need to know. Go to Egypt. Deliver my people. Well, Moses thought he could outplay God again.
Well, he didn't take insecurity. He didn't take ignorance. Let me see if I can throw this one out at him and get him to change his mind. Lord, I'm just a little intimidated. He gave number three the excuse of intimidation. Intimidation. Look with me at chapter 4 and verse number 1. And Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me. They're not going to hearken unto my voice, God. They're not going to listen to me. And Moses feared how the Hebrew elders would respond to his leadership. And he said, Lord, they're bigger than me. They're smarter than me. They're not going to believe me. You know, I believe with all my heart that Satan loves to intimidate God's people away from the direction, that he is leading them into. If he can put something in your path that intimidates you from doing what God is leading you to do, then Satan has you exactly where he wants you. I mean, think how many times Satan attempted to intimidate those who were doing the will of God in the Bible. For Elijah, the prophets of Baal, he was thinking it's too many. For David and Goliath, he was thinking that he's too big. And for Jeremiah and his ministry to Israel, he's thinking this is too hard. And here's Moses saying, hey, they won't believe me. They won't understand what I'm telling them to do. And here's what God says. Look at verse number 2. And the Lord said unto him, what is in thine hand? Moses, what are you holding? Moses looks and says, a rod. Now, about 5 or 6 years ago, when I would preach from this passage, and the Yankees were doing really, really good, I would use this verse as an opportunity to give you scriptural foundation as to why a rod was relevant in the Bible. Because the scripture says right here that the Lord gave Moses a rod. And so God gives us a rod, except the difference is this a rod was not on steroids, all right? Now the rod here was a sign of God's power. That's what it was. It would be the means by which God would prove his ability to Moses and accomplish that which he was leading him to do. And so he looks at him and says, what's in your hand? Moses has said, a rod. That was his answer. Okay? You're intimidated. You don't know what to say. You don't know what to do. You don't think they're going to believe you. But I've given you everything you need to convince them. It wasn't the physical rod. It was the power of God. The power of God. Moses, I have given you what you need so that they will listen to you. The power of God. Oh, God would never lead you to do something if he wasn't going to give you his power to do it. Do you know how many times I've heard as a young preacher through the years? I heard it just 2 weeks ago from another guest. I was having dinner at their home and they said, Pastor, I got to be honest with you. My first Sunday I came in and I kept looking around, where's the pastor? Where's the pastor? Where's the pastor? Then all of a sudden you walked up on the platform and I'm thinking, this person's way up in years. They're thinking, that can't be the pastor. I mean, look at him. I mean, he said, I'm sorry. I was just thinking to myself, there's no way that guy can preach. I mean, there's just no way that he can preach. Look at him. And then he started preaching and then people started coming and it was just evident that God's hand was upon your life. And I kind of feel like that sometimes. It's just a rod. It's really not much of a shell of anything. Although Planet Fitness is teaching me some really good things right now. How to eat a pizza correctly and how to lift weights. All right. And so it's really going. The bottom line is it don't matter what you look like. No matter what you look like. I was preaching in Oklahoma one time and I was introduced as death eating a cracker. I said, you look terrible. You look terrible. You don't look like God can use. Hey, doesn't matter what you look like. God told Saul, hey, a man looks on the outward. God sees on the inside, and all he's concerned about is the power of God and the hand of God on a person's life. That's what he was saying to Moses. God, they're not going to believe me. Hey, you've got my power. That's all you need. It doesn't matter. You got my power, and my power will allow them to follow and listen to you. And he gives them several examples of his power in verses 3 through 9. I don't have time to read all the verses, but one thing he does is he says, Moses, I want you to throw that rod on the ground. Moses throws it on the ground. All of a sudden, it turns into a snake. That's when I would have said, okay, God, I'm through here. Good night. Thanks for coming. See you later. Bye-bye. My brother Aaron can take care of this job for you.
If it doesn't get any bad, he says, Moses, now I want you to pick up the snake. God, I ain't picking up no snake. Don't pick it up. He picks it up and he turns right back in the rod. He looks at him and says, Moses, I'm going to help you. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to give you my power. Oh, he shares with him several other illustrations. The bottom line is this. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. And if God is leading you to do something, intimidation does not fly to God, because where He leads you, He guides you into His power and into His strength, and He will use you to do that which He is calling you. Now, you think Moses would have gotten the picture by now? I mean, good night, his own rod turned into a snake and back. I mean, surely he would not be that crazy to offer another excuse, but he did. He tried one more. One more. If insecurity and ignorance and intimidation wasn't going to work, number four, he tried the excuse of incapability. Incapability. Just incapable, God. Look at verse number 10. Moses said to the Lord, Oh my Lord, I am not eloquent. Neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. Moses had a speech impediment. That's what it meant here. He stuttered. He did like this. And like, can imagine that Moses is saying to God, I'm not eloquent. I don't know how to talk. I'm slow of speech. I'm from North Carolina and I have a slow tongue. I'm glad to do this for you, God, but I'm incapable. I'm incapable. My speech impediment, which I have one, is not that bad. My speech impediment has to do with the crazy direction that my teeth like to go sometimes, and often say words that I don't mean to. And so when you go home and have to tell your children, Pastor did not mean to say that word in the pulpit. It's not that it was on purpose. It was just a speech impediment. I know what it's like to struggle with that at times. And Moses was saying, hey, I have a weakness. I don't know if you're aware of this, God. I mean, think about what he's saying to God. I don't know if you're aware of this, God, but I have a weakness. And I feel incapable of what you're leading me to do. Now, I have to say, by this point, you would think Moses would have figured it out by now, that if God could take a rod and turn it into a snake, that he surely wasn't worried about a little stuttering problem. But notice what God said to Moses in verse 11. And the Lord said unto him, who hath made man's mouth? I kind of want to think that God said that sarcastically. Moses, let me ask you a question. Who made you? Who made your mouth? Who makes people dumb and deaf and seeing and the blind? Who does that? Moses, is that not my responsibility? Is that not me who made you that way? I did. You're not telling me nothing I don't know. You're not giving me a weakness I've never heard of. I made you with a stuttering problem. I gave you that weakness. I made you that way. I think when we tell God our weaknesses, we aren't sharing anything with Him He does not already know. All of these excuses were a reminder that God knows us better than we know ourselves. God knows us better than we know ourselves, and the will of God will never lead us where the power of God cannot enable us. Yes, Moses, you have a stuttering problem, but I'm going to work through that, and I'm going to use that weakness in your life to declare my power before the children of Israel. Don't get caught up on your incapabilities, because I can use you in spite of your speech impediment. I had a guy in college one time that had a terrible, terrible, terrible stuttering problem. I mean, terrible. Worst I've ever heard. He's from Arizona. It was good friends. We were, I think we were in the same grade. And we had opportunities, a small Bible college. And so the first Monday night, or actually every Monday night, about 9 o'clock, we would come together in the college chapel and the preacher boys throughout the year would get an opportunity to share a devotional. 15, 20 minutes, and then we pray together. And all of us went through it, and were scheduled. And Jeremiah was his name. Jeremiah, came time for him. And I got to be honest with you, Jeremiah and I were friends. We could speak plainly and honestly to each other. And he was really worried. To be honest with you, I was worried for him because a lot of the students were not very nice to Jeremiah, as far as it was a constant point of criticism in his life. And you know how kids can be sometimes. And it was bad. I mean, his stuttering was so bad. I mean, you would get frustrated because you knew what he was trying to say, but he couldn't say it. You wanted to finish the sentences every single time. And I remember thinking to myself when he was on that schedule, Lord, I just hope this goes well. He felt God's hand was upon his life. Thought God was calling him to preach and is being used to that extent even today. And there was never a time when Jeremiah ever spoke to anybody, ever, when he didn't stutter. But I will never forget that night when he got up to preach his very first sermon. And from the moment he stood behind that pulpit and he said, turn in your Bible, so whatever passage, to the moment he said the last amen, not one time did he ever stutter. Not one time did he ever lose a train of thought. We thought it was someone different. And we realized it was. It was the power of God on display. It was the Spirit of God saying, I'm going to use you in spite of your weaknesses, in spite of your incapabilities. And today, God is still using him. Does he stutter? Yeah, he stutters. When he gets in the pulpit, it's as clear sometimes more than I am. God has used him greatly. The point I'm trying to make to you is that your excuses are no good to God. God is leading you to do something, but it's not going to work. God's not going to accept him. Let me give you this third one and we'll be finished. Number three, I must go forward in God's divine plan for my life. I must go forward in God's divine plan for my life. In verses 18 through 31, Moses began to prepare for his journey. And he received a lot of encouragement for what God was leading him to do. He finally gave in and said, yes, I'll do it, God. I'll follow through with what you're leading me to do. His father-in-law, Jethro, gave his blessing, which I think is so important. His wife, Zipporah, was willing to go. His brother, Aaron, came alongside of him for the task. Well, there's a message within itself, Mom and Dad, right there just from that passage, 18 through 31, about why it is so important for the family to rally around God's people when God leads them to do something. One of the biggest frustrations in life as a minister, as a pastor, as a preacher, is when you see moms and dads get in the way of God leading their children. It would have been very difficult after all these excuses and then finally Moses surrendering to come home and Jethro not be for it and his wife Zipporah give him a hard time and Aaron said, you're on your own. I mean, if Moses would have been in that position, I'm sure maybe he would have still gone. But it would not have been easy to do that. Be careful, wife, that you don't stand in the way of God leading your husband. Be careful, Dad, that you don't stand in the way of God leading your children. And then when you come to the Hebrew people at the end, particularly the elders, these were the very ones that Moses was fearful of how they would respond to his leadership. But notice verse 29. We'll read these three verses and we'll be finished. Moses and Aaron went, gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel, and Aaron spake all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses. And he did the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed. And when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel, and that he looked upon their affliction, they bowed their heads and worshipped. Moses shared the good news of grace and deliverance, and they responded in worship. By the way, worship is the logical response to God's grace and goodness. It is the logical response to God's grace and goodness. And from that moment, I believe Moses learned the lesson. The lesson was to go forward in God's plan for his life. No matter what God was leading him to do, no matter how many excuses that he offered, God proved himself right here in this verse that if he would just go forward with God's plan for his life, he would see the power of God in supernatural ways. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 tells us that one day all of us are going to stand before God at the Bema Seat judgment. On that day, only two things are going to recur in life. Rewards or regrets. That's it. Every Christian will one day stand before God, and God will give out rewards or you will have regrets. Which one of those we have at the judgment seat of Christ is contingent on whether we obey God's leading or whether we continually offer excuses for why we cannot go forward with God's leading for our life. Don't let excuses keep you from God's best and God's blessings.